Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikitas.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 397 with John C. Maxwell. This is a really fun conversation because I've been reading John's books for literally decades since I was in high school. So great stuff. And we chat about his latest book, Leadershift, and the changes that need to get made as you're growing in influence. So you'll learn one, John's approach to mentorship, two, how insecurity kills effective leadership, and three, the ACT method to make the most out of your reflections. So if you want to take a look at the show notes or the transcript or the links to items we've referenced, it's on over at awesomeatyourjob.com/F397. Now here's John's story. John C. Maxwell is the number one New York Times bestselling author, coach, and speaker who has sold more than 30 million books in 50 languages. He's been identified as the number one leader in business by the American Management Association and the most influential leadership expert in the world by Business Insider and Inc. magazines. He's the founder of the John Maxwell Company, the John Maxwell Team, Equip, and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation, organizations that have trained millions of leaders from almost every country in the world. He's the recipient of the Mother Teresa Prize for Global Peace and Leadership from the Luminary Leadership Network, and Dr. Maxwell speaks each year to Fortune 500 companies, presidents of nations, and many of the world's top business leaders. He can be followed at twitter.com/John C. Maxwell, and for more information about him, you can check out johnmaxwell.com. Here is John. John, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Pete, and your listeners. We're going to have a wonderful time. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you. Well, me too. You know, you've been a role model for me for years and years, and I'm excited to dig in. And first, I kind of want to get your take on, you know, you've really taught leadership to millions. Can you tell me who taught you the most about leadership? And maybe could you share a story of a key lesson that has stuck with you?
Well, my father, who's 97, by the way, and still alive.
Awesome.
And I grew up in a leader's home, so I just watched it. I mean, I saw it before I understood it, and kind of probably as a kid thought everybody had that kind of a home as far as leadership and just really, you know, great direction. So I would say my father, because I've been with him and watched him, of course, his whole life. And then I had John Wooden as a mentor, and he was a phenomenal teacher, and probably as just a quote, an official mentor, Pete, he probably taught me more than anyone else. I mean, you know, he taught me about, you know, when opportunity comes, it's too late to prepare, and just how to always be ready for that moment, and, you know, make every day your masterpiece, and just goes on and on. So he was a phenomenal mentor, but I've been very fortunate. I've just had people come into my life from my early age, and even today, just, you know, people that speak into my life and help me and add value to me. And I don't have one mentor. I think one mentor is kind of maybe a little bit misguided. I'm not sure one mentor is good enough to mentor you in every area. I pick my mentors based upon the areas that I need assistance in. So I have a couple mentors for leadership, a couple mentors for team development and work, a couple mentors maybe for attitude development and tenacity and that kind of thing, and a couple mentors in the area of communication or relationships. So, you know, it depends on where I am and kind of what I'm needing. And then I just kind of pick the mentor that kind of that's where the strength is. So when people come to me and they, you know, say, John, would you mentor me? I smile and I tell them, not that good, sir. You know, the answer is no. You know, I'm just good at a few things. I'll be glad to help you at a few things, but most of things in life, I'm still just trying to grow and learn and not too hot myself in. So, but I know this, every day of my life, I'm standing on the shoulders and I'm better because of people who have invested in me and given me time. And of course, I just turn that around and try to mentor others also and be a mentor to, you know, to other leaders. So it's a beautiful journey once you understand that we're all to be a river, not a reservoir. And, you know, just kind of let it flow through you. Help other people and add value to them. So that's kind of where I am in the area of my mentoring world right now.
Gotcha. You know, when you talk about the journey, I like that. And you have unpacked a few kind of key moments or lessons in your journey in your latest book, Leadershift. What would you say is the main message in this book?
Well, I think the main message is that you can only strengthen and sustain your leadership if you continue to make changes or make shifts in your life, that there's no one way to lead and there's no way to lead continually, and that we have to be agile and have to adjust and have to understand the times. You know, leaders really understand context. What all leaders have in common, Pete, is that they see more than others see. So they see a bigger picture, and they see before others see. They not only see that picture larger than others, they see it quicker than others. And that being the case, they're the first ones to know, and or to sense at least, or to maybe begin to grasp. And so the more they can adjust, and the better they adjust, the quicker they adjust, the more effective they're going to be as a leader. And the book really is all about adjustments that I've had to make, leaderships that I've had to make in my life to continue to be effective as a leader today. It's very easy to begin to kind of rest on your position or your title and expect it to do your work for you. And when that happens, we no longer are on the edge. We no longer are seeing more than before. And so therefore, we're no longer on cutting edge as far as leading people. So the book's really all about, how do you stay on that cutting edge? I had an interview recently, and the person commented about the fact that I've been doing leadership for 40 plus years, writing books, teaching, speaking on leadership, learning, doing my best to be a better leader. And they asked me, they said, well, how have you for so long stayed in the game? And I said, well, I guess the main way I've done that is I realized it's not the same game.
Yeah.
It's kind of like baseball, you know. I mean, to use an analogy, you know, the game is baseball, and every day there is a baseball game, but that no game is alike. And so you can't depend on what happened in yesterday's game to be what's going to happen today. Yes, the game is called baseball, but pretty much after you finish the rules, that everything else is going to be fluctuating. You know, Babe Ruth said, yesterday's home run won't win today's game. And I find that very true. And so whatever I was doing yesterday, I'm glad that I could do it. I hope I did it well. But that really doesn't mean that I can do the same thing today. In fact, the greatest detriment, Pete, to a person's success the greatest detriment to tomorrow's success is today's success. And the moment I kind of get settled in today and kind of say, I've got this formula, I want to hold on to it, I want to keep it, you know, it's just not going to happen. It just doesn't happen that way. And especially where in the times we live right now with social media, there's such an incredible awareness that's happening. And I was getting ready to speak for a company, and what I do when I go speak for companies, I have a pre-call to kind of find out where they are and how I can best serve them by finding out what's your theme, what's your objectives, et cetera. And so this company I was going to speak for, their theme was fast forward. So the person on the call said, John, what does that theme mean to you? I said, well, let me just tell you what each word means to me. When I think of fast, it means to me, when I think about today, it's fast as faster. It's fast as faster than it's ever been before. And I love when people say, well, you know, I'm just going to hold for a while and see, wait till things kind of slow down. It makes sense. I said, I'm sorry. You're going to have to die for that to happen. It just isn't going to be there. So fast is faster. And forward, Pete, is shorter. Yeah. And what I mean by that is when I started leading, my gosh, when I was working on a business degree, when they talked about a long-range plan, they talked about 10 years. And a medium-range plan was 5. The short-range plan was 2. Well, that's a ridiculously long-range plan today, 2 years. You kind of say, boy, can you get it down to 12 to 18 months? And so forward is shorter and fast is faster. Well, if that's the case, which it is, then a book like Leadership is essential. If we are not continually looking over the land and adjusting ourselves and being very agile, being very quick to go, we're not going to be very effective. And one of the things in the book, one more thing, Pete, and I'll shut up, but one of the things that in the book that I really am glad I addressed was this issue of uncertainty, because there are a lot of people who say, well, I want to be certain before I, you know, make that move or make that decision. And I talk about the fact that it's not possible, and that leaders, the best leadership leaders, they're very comfortable with uncertainty. They understand that are having to move before they have all the answers or before they have all of the direction or all the steps. And they realize that it is in the movement that they get clarity and they get more direction. And in fact, what I tell people, if you really want to kind of know what's going to happen in 3 months, start moving now. And the resources, the events, the experiences start flowing towards you in that process. So I think leaders need to be clear in their vision. But I think as far as the journey is concerned, we just have to have a real sense of openness and authenticity with people and say, I'm making all of my moves based upon what I think and what I believe, but I don't have total clarity on this at all. We're just going because, again, speed, the ability to move quick, is so essential in leadership today.
Absolutely. And so with that said, in terms of the importance of being able to make those shifts, you lay out 11 key shifts as examples, and we'll dig into a couple of those. But I'd like to first hear, across the board, what are some of the key perspectives or best practices when it comes to how we go about making a shift?
Well, I think, first of all, security. I just feel that a leader that is insecure won't be agile enough. And so I think that's essential.
And we say insecure. I'm intrigued there. Could you give us some examples of what are the things that make leaders insecure? What are they worried about?
Well, I think an insecure person, first of all, most of the time is not comfortable in their own skin. Mm. They themselves haven't yet come to a real sense of who they are. You know, and it's very difficult to help people become who they would like to become if you're not really sure who you are. I think that insecure people are those who mainly want to be liked and like people to always applaud them. And you know, leadership's tough. And there's just, you know, you're going to make decisions that are not going to be always popular. I think an insecure person, that most of them are controlling. And I think controlling is a very damaging thing in the culture we live today. And again, if you're relying on agility and speed, if you have to control every person and every decision and every movement, you're just in deep weeds. I think maybe Pete, this will illustrate it as good as I can. Gail Devers, that's probably a name many of your listeners can recognize. She was a tremendous Olympic athlete and track star for the United States. And I think as a female track star, I think she won more medals than any other American Olympian. But anyway, terrific athlete and won medals in 3 different Olympics. So, just think of that span to be a world-class athlete. In fact, the night I was having dinner with her and her husband in Atlanta, she was really training for her 4th Olympics, if you could imagine. She was running races against, young ladies that were young enough to be her daughter. And so we're having a great conversation, great meal. She had read a lot of my books and she wanted to ask some questions about leadership. So we're having a good discussion. And toward the end of the meal, I said to her, I said, Gail, I said, I've been thinking about this all dinner. I think if you and I ran a 100-yard race, I think I could win. And I wish you could see her face. I mean, she looked at me in such disbelief. Of course, an athlete this good is highly competitive. She looked at me, and then she looked at her husband. She said, "Did you hear what he said?" And her husband said, "I heard that." And then she looked back at me, and kind of disgustingly, I mean, I'm not in that kind of shape. I kind of look more like the Pillsbury Doughboy. So I can see that I've got her almost to the place where she's ready to take off those heels and go out in front of the restaurant and say, "We're gonna run a block, and I'm just going to show you how delusional you are." But so I got her right to that point, which was a lot of fun. And then I said, "Now, Gail, really, honestly, I do think I could win a 100-yard race with you if I had an 80-yard head start."
Yeah.
And she's got this. Oh well, shoot. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hello. Now, to be honest with you, I really wanted to say 70 yards, but I wasn't sure I could do it with 70. I thought, but 80, I could kind of roll across the line. I think I can do that. So, and of course, then we all had a good laugh, but the point's very simple. It the fastest person doesn't win the race. It's the person who gets started first.
Right.
And starting first is everything. And again, leadership is all about starting first. It's all about being, again, quick and ready to move and being flexible. And while others are kind of considering it, you know, you're already there. And so when I think of the 11 leaderships in the book, there are, my gosh, there are probably 100 leaderships a person has to make. Yeah. And I've made more than the 11, but these are the 11 in the book that are like what I would call the Mount Everest type of stuff, the big stuff that not only I had to make, but probably every person that wants to lead is going to have to make in their lifetime, sometime in their lifetime. And I think that the greatest thing in life for me to do, and one of the reasons I write and speak all the time, is to create awareness. You just can't fix what you don't know. It needs to be fixed. And the moment that a person who is hungry to learn and grow and get better becomes aware, all of a sudden everything begins to change. And you know, once you've had the light turned on for yourself, you know, you want to go into a room with people and turn the light on for everybody. And this is kind of a turn the light on book. It's just kind of a book that basically says, here, my name's John, I'm your friend, let me turn the light on, let's talk about a few of these shifts you need to make, and let me kind of tell you how I did it, and cheer you on while you make them yourself.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about a few of them here, or maybe just a couple. So, choosing here. Well, what would you say, if you had to pick, which one do you think is the most critical for leaders to make, or perhaps the most overlooked? Like, oh, I need to do that, and I was not yet aware. Thanks for turning the light on.
Well, one of the ones I find when I, you know, I've taught on this before, I write on it. Basically, the way I write books is I teach stuff, and when it sticks, I think, oh gosh, if it's sticking with the audience, I need to put it on paper. So I think one of them that has given me maybe my greatest reward, but people don't think of very much, is the shift from what I call ladder climbing to ladder building. And in that chapter, I talk about the fact that we all start off as ladder climbers. I did. I mean, I got my first leadership responsibility, and the question was, how high can I climb on this ladder? And I'm taking off. How high can I go? And I think for every person that is going to be a successful leader, they have to be a good ladder climber. They need to get to the top. I mean, when you think about it,
the
credibility I have, Pete, as a leader, is that I'm successful. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think somebody wants to follow me if I'm not successful? I mean, whoever gets up and says, wow, you know, gosh, I'm not doing well financially. I got to go find somebody that's gone bankrupt a couple times and get some advice from them. And, you know, the first thing we turn to is we turn to somebody that has done it well. I mean, you know, we teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. And so we turn to that person. So I started off ladder climbing and did pretty good. I was a pretty good ladder climbing. I kind of got to the top quickly, but I understood then that that really had very little to do with leadership. It had a lot to do with some competence that I had and some giftedness that I had. But I decided that I needed to start thinking of others and what am I doing? So I went from ladder climbing to what I call ladder holding. Mm-hmm. And that's basically where I go over to you, Pete, and say, hey, could I hold your ladder for you? And what I know about somebody holds a ladder for somebody is that they provide security for that person. They provide a solid foundation. And what I know is, Pete, if I hold your ladder, you're going to climb higher than if I don't hold your ladder. I'm going to allow you to, what I would call it, achieve a couple of extra runs in your life. And you're going to go a little bit higher than you would go if I wasn't there. And so that's kind of a shift that I made from, you know, I'm just going to climb my own ladder and build my own thing and do my own thing to, well, shoot, why don't I go help some other people? So I made the shift to a ladder holder. And then what this is very, you know, again, it's a journey. So you don't know this stuff on the front end. You always know it during the process and on the back end. As I was holding people's ladders, what I discovered is two things. One is that they climbed higher because I helped them and served them. And number two is some of them really could climb high.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I realized as a ladder holder, I was able to find out who the potential successful people and leaders would be. I mean, some just climb higher than others with my help. Ladder holding became the qualifying exercise I did to go to the next shift, which was ladder extending. You know, if I'm holding your ladder, you get completely as high as you could go. I'm saying, gosh, you know, let's extend this thing. The only reason you didn't go any higher is there wasn't any more ladder there. Let's get you some more ladder feet and go for it. And so ladder holding allowed me to qualify really who I mentor, because that's what I would put in the ladder extending area. It's now all of a sudden you're taking them to another level, and you're helping them just go to heights that they never would have gone. And then again, all this does is evolves into the next natural shift. And as I'm extending your ladder, we've got that baby up pretty high at Peacher. You take that extension, just keep on climbing. And all of a sudden I realized you could basically climb as high as we can extend.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's really, really no limits to you. And then, so it's kind of like, wow, this is the ultimate. I'm extending people's ladders and they're going higher than they ever thought were possible and making a bigger difference than they ever would have dreamed. And I'm just getting all excited about it. Then I realized, no, there's another shift yet. And this is the one that's really going to make the big difference for people. And so I'm going, if you can see me, from ladder climbing to ladder holding to ladder extending to ladder building. And I just look at you and I say, Pete, you need to build your own ladder. You don't need to use my ladder. I need to empower you. I need to release you. I need to bless you. I need to let you go and let you, build your own kingdom, build your own business, build your own work, be your own entrepreneur. You don't really need me. And what's incredible is that when I became a ladder builder, that's when I developed all these incredible leaders that I've had the privilege of, for so many years, having watched them, many of them do better than what I could ever do, that's for sure. And to me, then, I think the greatest fulfillment is not seeing how high I can go. When I was climbing my own ladder, I figured out pretty quick I can go pretty high. But that's kind of an end in itself. And I thought, okay, I know what I can do, but I wonder what I could do with people. I wonder if I could help them to go high. And so those shifts, I have a fondness for this whole ladder shifting because I just, that's kind of like the story of my life, where I've been and what I've done and kind of where I am and really what I love to do. My greatest joy today is just fathering a lot of leaders and just blessing them and watching them again excel incredibly. It makes me very proud and very humble to have maybe a little part in it. That's for sure.
Well, that's really cool. And so when you're doing this ladder holding and this ladder extending and ladder building, what are some of the particular practices or key questions you're asking? What are you doing in practice when you're providing this support on the ladder?
Well, I lead by questions. That's how I lead. Probably one of the big shifts I had in my life was that in the beginning, I led by direction. I just kind of basically pointed and gave people direction on where to go and what to do. And I made the discovery, really, that wasn't the highest or the best way to lead. And so over time, again, it's all maturing and learning and growing. I went from giving a lot of directions to asking more questions, because the whole principle is based on the fact you gotta find your people before you can lead them.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete, one of the great disasters in leadership is leading by assumption. Hmm. And wow, gosh, I see it all the time. I had a wonderful friend, Pat Summitt, who passed away a couple years ago, but she was the University of Tennessee Lady Volunteers basketball coach I think the most successful woman's coach ever in basketball, in college basketball. I think she had over 1,000 wins, but she was an amazing woman, an amazing leader, and an amazing person. And so she would feed her team my books and got to me and talked to me and asked me if I'd come up sometime and talk to the team and go to the game. And I said, sure. So I did. It was an incredible experience, because at halftime, the lady volunteers went into the locker room and I kind of followed them and the coaches. And Pat just said, well, sit right here in the room with the basketball players for a moment. And her and the coaches went off into another room.
Hmm.
No, it's just incredible. One of the basketball players, one of the lady volunteer gals, there was a marker board at the front of the room, and the marker board had two questions: what did we do right, what did we do wrong, and what do we need to change? And they went into this exercise where one player led the other players. Okay, in the first half, what did we do right? They wrote down three or four things they did right. Okay, what did we do wrong? Wrote a few things down they did wrong. What do we need to change in the second half to improve, to get better? So they wrote these things down. This exercise didn't take them long, because they were used to doing it. It took them 5 minutes, maybe. Here comes Pat into the locker room, goes straight to the marker board, looks at what do we do right, what do we do wrong, what do we need to change? Made a couple comments, not very many, maybe a minute or two, just a couple comments, affirmed what they were thinking and, you know, maybe tweaked them if they weren't, maybe, or if they missed something. And out on the floor, they went and played the second half. And after the press conference, Pat and I went out to dinner, and I said, Pat, I said, that was an amazing exercise. I said, talk to me about it. And she said, here's what she told me. She said, John, my first year and a half as a coach, I was not a good coach, and my teams were not successful. And she said, I kept asking myself, okay, what am I missing? She said, I just knew that there was something that was obvious, but I was missing it as a coach to help me out. And she said, I came to the conclusion after about 18 months that I was assuming that these players knew what I knew. And I was assuming that they had basics under their belt. And I was assuming that when I talked to them, we were all on the same page. And she said, John, I wasn't on the same page with them at all. I wasn't even in the same book with some of them. And she said, All of a sudden I realized that I was trying to lead them and I hadn't found them yet. And so she said, I started asking questions. And so I went to this exercise. And she said, I can walk in now. And while I'm walking to the marker board, by the time I get to the front, I already know if they're aware and if they understand. And if they don't, she said, it's my job as a coach to get them on the same page I'm on as far as awareness is concerned. But she said, it just changed everything. She said, now I coach from where they are, not coach from where I think they are. And so when you talk about shifting and where I am and this book, and in fact, one of the leaderships that I talk about in the book is going from directing to connecting. And that directing to connecting is you connect by asking questions. And so today, pretty much I lead everybody, everything I lead, I basically go in and ask questions and find out where they are. And as soon as I find out where they are, then leadership's pretty simple. And I put a whole chapter in the book on just that, because I thought, my gosh, if they just learn to find their people, it'll be life-changing. That's for sure.
And those questions are so great. With you talk about the assumption is that you can very clearly see, oh, wow, you know, you have a completely different perspective on what you think you did right and wrong than I do. So, okay, this is where we're going to start, as opposed to, okay, perfect. And to just sort of facilitate ownership along the way, that's huge.
Yeah, they say Vince Lombardi, of course, the great Super Bowl coach of the Packers, they say what he would bring all these pros together for their first practice at the beginning of the season. The first thing he did is hold up a football and he looked at these pros. Now think about it. They played high school, they played college, they're a pro, they're the best in the profession. And he would start off every year with the same speech, and he'd hold up a football and say, gentlemen, this is a football. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't about to assume anything. He's just, let's just talk about it. Let's start from the basics and work our way up. Wow. I'm blessed. I have several companies and got a lot of balls in the air, and I just found and discovered that if I just go and ask questions, I very quickly can find out what they know, what they don't know, where they are. It just answers everything for me. So I think learning to ask great questions, it helps us to connect on common ground with them, which becomes pretty amazing, to be honest with you.
That's great. And if I may, I'd love to hear maybe just a couple bullets. Like, what are some of your favorite powerful go-to questions that have served you well again and again?
Well, for example, if you and I were in any kind of a meeting, let's say that we were in a creative meeting, we're talking about, I don't know, the brand or whatever. But when we're all finished meeting, I'll just say, okay, let's just go around the room and give me what you think is the most important takeaway right now that you just got out of this time, out of this session. And it kind of helps me to know very quickly if they're assessing what I'm assessing in that meeting or not. You know, with my children, even with my grandchildren today, whenever we have an experience, I always ask them, as soon as the experience is over, they know I'm going to ask them two questions. My children, if I did this once, I did it 10,000 times. With my grandchildren, probably about that many too. And I just look at them when we're done with an experience. I'll say, okay. And they know it's coming. What did you love? What did you learn?
Yeah.
And I always start with kids with what did you love, because they always know that they feel that emotion. But what did you learn? And it's just phenomenal, because you see, experience is not the best teacher, Pete. We hear it all the time. People say, well, experience is the best teacher, but it's not. It really isn't. If experience were the best teacher, then as people get older, they'd all get better.
Right.
Because they have more experience. And yet I know most people I know, they're not getting better. They're getting worse. And experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher.
Beautiful.
Taking time to come out of an experience and then pull away and reflect. You know, reflection really takes experience and turns it into insight. And so what I do is I constantly ask myself, in fact, when I'm done with our time together, I'll take 3 minutes because it's just a habit. It's one of my hopefully better habits, it's a practice, that's for sure. I'll take 3 minutes and I'll go over what we just talked about. And I'll say, okay, when you're time with Pete and the listeners today, what are you taking out of that, you know, that 45-minute experience? What do you glean out of it, Maxwell? So I again, evaluating, reflection, asking questions. Boy, the moment that you begin to, when you begin to understand your people, I had a mentor named Charles Blair who said, John, always have an understanding so there's not a misunderstanding. And I just live that kind of a leadership life. And I'm very comfortable with asking questions. What's beautiful, it doesn't take a long time. In fact, and I run people all the time because I get some pushback on this from kind of choleric type, you know, top-down leaders. And they said, John, when you start asking questions, you give up control. I said, no, you don't understand. When you start asking questions, you're in total control because you're in control of the questions you're asking.
Yeah.
And that's what formulates the discussion. So go back to the Pat Summit University of Tennessee illustration. She was in total control when she walked in there because she was getting out of the girls exactly what she needed, what we do right, what we do wrong, what we need to change. She was in complete control. But while she was in control, she was also getting information that was very essential to her to lead them to the next step. Leadership is a very exciting venture when you just understand how to ask the question. In fact, I wrote a book, I don't know, 5 or 6, maybe 7 years ago. Gosh, time goes so fast. But I wrote a book that I just wanted to write it because I love to ask questions. But it just went kind of crazy. It took off, called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. And I have a chapter in there, Questions I Ask Myself, Questions I Ask My Team. And I just went through and helped people kind of understand, questions are kind of like keys. They unlock the lock. You know, you got this lock and you can't get in, but if you got the key, you can. And questions just kind of open up the doors for me and allow me to do that. So I love it. So that chapter on directing to connecting and the leadership book was, gosh, it was a lot of fun because I think it's just going to be very enlightening to a lot of people. I think they're going to have a lot of aha moments when they get there.
Oh, that's cool. Well, yeah, I want to talk about sort of a big key and a big question, and that's particularly to shift into an explicitly Christian context for a moment for our listeners of faith. When I got John C. Maxwell, I can't not ask, tell me, what's your take on how we can most effectively listen to God's voice and take the appropriate steps and make the shifts that he wills for you?
Well, I made that shift about 4 years ago.
Only four.
I really did. I think I was typical of most people in their prayer time. You know, I had a list, and you know, when I took some time with God, I would go down my list, typical choleric, and kind of talk to him about it, check it off. And about 4 years ago, you know, I was just thinking of, you know, basically the scripture principle that, you know, that God's ways are higher than ours, and that, you know, that God knows what we need more than we know what we need. And all of a sudden, I started getting a little bit amused, and I felt, how ironic that I'm spending all my time with my agenda when I pray with God. I'm much more interested in my agenda than I am on his agenda. And it kind of came to a catalyst one time when I had a person who was in a conversation with him, and they said, well, you know, they were talking to me, and they just said, well, she said, I would just like to directly hear from God. I started smiling. And I said, no, you don't. You don't really want to directly hear from God. I said, if you did it, trust me, it's not on your agenda. It's not what you think he's going to say or what he's going to hear. And I was kind of amused by it. And then I thought to myself, I wonder what would happen if I just took that approach to prayer. And so I switched about 4 years ago, and I have no agenda in prayer anymore. I have an agenda, and that is to listen and to be still and to hear his voice. And so I take a legal pad and a 4-color pen, and I sit, and I have the word with me, and I just open my heart and basically share with God that I want him to speak. And he may speak through an experience that I had recently, or he may speak through a passage of scripture, he may speak through some music, but I'm just going to listen to you. And it's really changed my life. It's made me want to spend more time with him. Before, it was kind of like I wanted to spend more time with him so I could get through my list. But now it's kind of like, I wonder what surprise he has for me. I wonder what he's thinking today that, you know, it's going to really add value to me or take me in a direction I wouldn't even imagine. And so anyway, I kind of made I guess you could call that a prayer shift in my life. But I really found it to be very effective. And, you know, I'm kind of grateful for it, to be honest with you.
That's really cool. And now I want to get your take on how do you differentiate in those moments, like something pops into your head between what you think is you and what you think is the Lord?
Oh, well, I think I'm asked that question often, and I think I have a really good answer.
And oh, boy.
The fact is, well, I really do. And I tell people all the time, well, a whole bunch of it's me because I'm human. And so even though I have a great desire to hear from him, I don't say that I don't have a lot of John in that thought pattern. So, but where it really helps me is the fact that when it's him, it stays with me. And so what I basically do is I'll say, okay, these are the five things I sense from you today. And I think I'll table them for 24 hours and we'll come back and let me just see if any of them resonate. And I find that tabling them for the right reason, not for a reason of disobedience, but more of a reason for discernment. I come back the next day, and the wood and the hay, or the stuff just kind of the chaff separates from the real thing. And if I keep coming back to it three or four times over like a week, Pete, then I after a while I say, okay, yeah, this is something I need to really learn from and spend time listening to him. And one of the beautiful things that has come out of this, just really beautiful, that I think the biggest lesson I've learned out of it, I don't know, but it seems to be the biggest one to me, is obedience.
Yeah.
You know, whatever he says to you, just do it. You know, that in John chapter 2, Cana of Galilee, and the wedding feast, and the water turned to wine. If you could imagine those servants taking those jars and filling them up with water, they have got to think this is the stupidest thing. And then when they were asked to take the jars to the host, I think they said, and this is the day I get fired. this is the day I get fired because they're asking for wine. I'm bringing water. Of course, when it was poured out, it was wine. And it said, basically the passage says, people didn't understand what had happened. But it said the servants knew. Well, the reason they knew is because they were in the act of obedience of putting the water in the buckets or in the jars. And the point being, Pete's very simple. Obedience is never understood on the front. It's always understood on the back end.
Oh, I really like that. And particularly that Bible story. Interesting fact, when I got married, my wedding gift to my groomsman was a little corkscrew wine opener that had inscribed on it that verse, do whatever he tells you. And it just seemed like
I love that.
It's like, hey, it's wine and it's good advice.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to steal that.
Steal it away, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Cool.
See, this is going to be such an easy evaluation. When I'm done with you, it's going to take me 5 seconds to figure out what my takeaway is today.
I'm honored.
That is a beautiful, beautiful gift. Whatever he says to you, do it.
Cool.
Gosh. So you had it inscribed on the opener?
That's right. So the corkscrew, there's a metal part. And so I had an engraver, put that in there.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I hope I have done for your listeners today what you've done for me. Or of course, you're doing it for them, too, because they're hearing this. So they're all going out and getting their Christmas idea. I'm going to sit down and talk. I'm going to talk to my wife about this. I think that would be a fabulous Christmas gift.
Cool. Well, I'm so glad to be able to contribute. Gosh. That's cool.
I love that. Thank you.
If you're at all like John and also get a thrill out of learning a new idea, I recommend you check out The Great Courses Plus. It helps you improve yourself and develop new skills. The Great Courses Plus, it's a video and audio online learning platform that can help you gain knowledge and skills across a wide range of interests, from business to finance to history to science and beyond. Without having to commit the time or money it takes to go back to school, The Great Courses Plus provides unlimited access to learn from great mentors, top professionals who are so passionate about their areas of expertise. They've got it filmed with excellent production value in a professional studio, which looks great. They got thousands of lectures to explore, and you can watch or listen anytime from anywhere, even on an airplane when you don't have an internet connection, because you can download their lectures in advance. So it's ready to go and no connection required. Lately, I've been digging the art of critical decision making. Now, critical decision making is one of my top areas of expertise, but I was still totally picking up extra tools in my toolkit from this course. It's that thorough and good. And we've heard before how decision making is such a master key, a timeless skill that equips all other skills and outcomes. So a very worthwhile thing to check out learning from. And Professor Michael Roberto is a great one to learn from. He's bringing it yet again in this course with great examples that cut across economics, politics, everyday life, which is why he's going to be a guest on the show coming up. Pretty cool. So in short, I think you'll dig The Great Courses Plus. We got a real cool offer going on for a limited time. You could get a full month of unlimited learning for free. And to start that free month, you can sign up through the special URL, thegreatcoursesplus.com/awesome. So in order to get that free month, you'll sign up via thegreatcoursesplus.com/awesome. And if you're leader shifting entails some job shifting and job applying, I recommend you check out JobScan. JobScan helps you optimize your resume and LinkedIn profile for your next job, and it's trusted by over 500,000 job seekers. So the situation here is that about 98% of large companies use applicant tracking systems, or ATSs, to search for qualified candidates from large applicant pools. So these are the systems that analyze resumes and CVs to surface candidates that best match their positions and filter out those who don't. Now, what's pretty cool is JobScan has used machine learning technology to build their own resume scanner that mimics these filters and helps job seekers optimize their resumes using the important keywords that are found in job descriptions. The result here is that you can mold your standard resume to fit a job description in mere minutes, which can save you tons of time if you're applying to a bunch of different opportunities. You can see how well your resume matches a given job. You can get tips based on the specific applicant tracking software program your desired company is using, and it can track your job search progress as you go along. JobScan Premium gives job seekers unlimited resume scans and access to exclusive tools like LinkedIn optimization, cover letter optimization, and resume format checks. You can go to jobscan.co and use the promo code AWESOME to get 10% off JobScan Premium. That's JobScan, JobScan.co, promo code AWESOME to get that 10% off of JobScan Premium. Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, in our last couple of minutes, you know, we like to do what I call the fast faves, get a quick perspective from you on some of your favorite things. So could you kick us off with a favorite quote, something that inspires you?
Well, I have so many of them, but the one I'm talking about the most now is everything worthwhile is uphill. Love that quote. In fact, I visually just raise my arm when I teach it. But basically what I tell people is there's nothing you have in your life worthwhile that didn't take time, effort, energy. It's all uphill. In fact, if you're going downhill, I don't know what you're going to arrive at, but it's not worthwhile. And the only way that you can go uphill, if everything worthwhile is uphill, the only way you can go uphill is to be intentional. And so that quote means a lot to me, because no one ever climbed a mountain by accident. No one ever talked about accidental achievements in their life. You know, it's intentional. In fact, I wrote a book, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago called Intentional Living. And the whole book is all about the fact that most people accept their life instead of lead their life. And so if you accept your life, you just come up with much less than what you could have in your life if you were intentional. So everything worthwhile is uphill. I think that's probably mine.
Excellent. Thank you. And how about a favorite book?
Well, of course, the Bible is my favorite book. And by the way, when I do leadership, of course, most of my world is secular, but people sometimes will say, where did you really get your leadership stuff? And I'll tell them everything I learned about leadership, I learned from the Bible, everything. In fact, I've had some great Q&A interaction times with secular community, basically saying, you give me your best leadership thought, and I'll give you a biblical foundation for it. And it's startling. It's startling. It's the greatest leadership book ever written. In fact, the favorite thing I've ever done was not writing books as much as that I had the privilege several years ago to do the Maxwell Leadership Bible and put my leadership lessons that I taught out of the Bible in the Bible.
Oh, cool.
And that leadership Bible is just, well, you know, a million Bibles later, it's just still going crazy. And I just finished my third edition, and I have Pete, over 600 lessons on leadership in that. I mean, every page has another leadership lesson, but it's all out of the Word. I'm reading a book right now called Leadership in Turbulent Times. Mm-hmm. Fabulous book. But I'm a fan of this author. Her name is Doris Kearns Goodwin.
All right.
And she's basically a presidential scholar, and she spent her whole life studying presidents of the United States. So she wrote, you know, a team of rivals about Lincoln, and she's written one on Kennedy, one on FDR, one on LBJ, one on Teddy Roosevelt, and I consume all of them. But this one is, she took Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, LBJ, and Lincoln, and basically wrote a book on how they led during turbulent times, and it's a fabulous read. I'm loving it.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Well, in our last moment here, could you share a final challenge or call to action for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
Yeah, well, I would just say, whenever I listen to something or in an experience, I always do what I call ACT. What should I apply? What should I change? And what should I teach someone else? And it's just, you know, simple. Act. I you know, if it's like a long session, I may get 3 or 4 A's, you know, a couple of C's, maybe 5 or 6 T's. And I look at them and I categorize them. And I just put ACT in the margins of my notes so that I can find them. And what's 1A, what's 2, or what's 1A, 1C, and 1T. And whatever those are, those 3 ACT, I just take the next 30 days and I do them every day, the 1A, 1C, and 1T, every day for 30 days until it kind of becomes a habit. And I've done this for 35 years and it just works.
Beautiful. Well, John, this has been a real treat. Thanks so much for all you're doing in the world. It's greatly appreciated. I hope that Leadership is another hit, and just keep on rocking.
Do my best, friend. Every day I have a great job. I just get up and add value to people. It's a pretty good gig, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Pete.
I was really intrigued by John's take about how insecurity is really so destructive to leadership. Like, folks, they're not really comfortable in their own skin. They don't really know who they are. And if that's you, that's okay. I think we've all maybe gone through phases of that at one time or another, some longer, some shorter. But it's really worthwhile to dig into that a little bit. Like, what are you really all about? And if you're about nothing in particular, then yeah, you can be swayed by wanting to look good, to get the approval and the applause of others, or suffer from the default decision-making criterion, which we heard from Drew Dudley. There's a lot of D's in that sentence, which was that you just tend to do whatever will avoid the most unpleasant consequences in the moment, which sure isn't inspirational. It doesn't inspire much. So I could see how that really kills the leadership mojo in terms of being influential with followers. So I think that's well worth thinking in terms of, are you falling into that trap, or do you have a really clear picture on who you are, what you're about, where you're going, that you can rally other folks behind, as opposed to just kind of trying to get by and not ruffle too many feathers or upset too many people or bring about too many negative consequences, because that's not really good for anybody. So again, the show notes, the transcript, the links to albums we've referenced, it's at awesomeatyourjob.com/F397. If you haven't already, I hope to push subscribe. We'll hear from our next guest. It is Donna Hicks. She is from Harvard, did a bunch of great research in there and applied into spooky high conflict war dangerous zones about dignity and what does it really mean to treat people well, and how she has really unpacked that into some particular categories of ways you might not even realize that you are disrespecting some people's dignity and the impact that makes and how to fix it. So a lot of good stuff from Donna. I hope to catch you there. Peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend 2 key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice.
If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.